For June the 23rd, 2023, we talk about MyHouse.wad, Diablo 4, Dark Escape 4D, and much more. Welcome to Level 462. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Meismith.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Thanks for understanding us taking last week off. I was not in town. I was taking a vacation.
I mean, you were in a town, I assume.
Yes. I went out to Portland for Gary's like wedding celebration thing. And it was a good time. They got married in January, and this was the reception. But when people asked, I think even family, when they asked, like, what, where are you going? I just said, it's a wedding.
It's easier.
Yeah. Rather than say, like, just weddings don't work like you think, old man. it was a good time. Got the check out. Go ahead.
I was going to say, before I let you get reflexively mad about a delay between wedding and reception, I'm just going to simplify it here.
Yeah. It is the light smear of fiction that makes all of this go down a lot more smoothly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do anything fun in Portland?
Just a bunch of odds and ends, honestly.
Went to a killer wedding reception.
Yeah. Like, that was on Saturday. On Sunday, we went out a couple towns over, and I forget the name of it, but it's like the town where the Intel campus is near Portland, like half hour away. They've got this arcade called Next Level.
Okay.
Which is gigantic. I've been in a lot of arcades, a lot of big arcades. This is the biggest one I've seen in terms of size and also just like sheer number of games in it. With a particular focus on pinball. So that was...
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah, there was a lot of pinball. And it, like, this, there was this really cool thing, because it's like they call it a pinball museum. It's, you know, it's an arcade. You pay $20 to go in and you have, you know, unlimited play, but it's, you know, an arcade. But on each of the pinball tables, there was like an info card or a sticker kind of explaining when this came out, what company made it, like what was notable about it when it came out, and like what was its legacy. So mm-hmm. like that was real cool to like go up and go, you know, to just as you were playing a table, you know, take a look at that and learn a little bit about these games. That was neat.
What was the physically largest installation in this arcade?
The physically largest, like game wise or
just, yeah, largest cabinet or like they have one of those arcade games that's two stories high and you sit in a thing that actually goes up and down.
No. I wouldn't get in one of those anyway because I got trapped in one of them when I was a kid.
Oh, no.
No, seriously. Went to a birthday party. It might have been like my 10th birthday at a at a GameWorks. Remember GameWorks, mm-hmm. the Sega mm-hmm. arcade, you know, kind of thing? Yeah, there was one of those where it's a shooter and it raises you up and down. Got stuck on the third story of it. And was up there for a while before they could get me down. So imagine me panicking as a 10-year-old, like, okay, is this just how I live now? Is this my house?
This is my home now.
Do I update my address?
I am the end boss.
So did anyone steal your car?
No. I bought a wheel lock to put on my car, like a club kind of thing. When I parked it at the long-term parking. Yeah.
Nice.
Take that, Kia boys.
Take that. Yeah. Foiled, hoisted. Yeah, no. So, no, it was a good trip. Went to the zoo, went up to, like, Washington Park and saw a bunch of roses and garden stuff. Hiked and saw some redwoods. It was neat. It was good.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. So that's me. That's what's going on. Dennis, how about you?
I am in the final hours of Origins Con prep.
Oh, shit.
So, That's I leave tomorrow morning at 8:30 to head out there.
Wow.
I thought I was going out Wednesday night to get there for the con to start on Thursday, but I got invited to speak at their like trade day. So that's fun.
Awesome.
And I'm just like taking some content from the class I teach and from previous work I've done, et cetera, and applying it to board games. Which is easy and fun for me to put together, and it gives me a great excuse to network. And just had me calling up my sister, who I'd be staying with me, and like, hey, so, what are you doing a day early?
You up for a last minute curveball?
Yeah, and thankfully she was very cool about it. But nice. Yeah, all the pins are falling into place, and we're ready to go. I am booth 645 for anyone who will be there in person.
Mm. And that's from the 21st through the 25th is what that is. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I wish you the best of luck. Break a leg at your talk. Have you done anything like that?
I mean, yes and no. This will be the first one of like this specific subject matter, but I've done this type of talk 1,000 times.
Nice.
Just for previous work stuff.
Yeah. It's fun.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's going to be up there hamming it up. You know, if you have enough hubris to do a podcast for a decade plus straight, you like talking enough that this sort of thing is exciting rather than terrifying.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Cool. Well, it's subject matter, you know, too. So that's good. Yeah. Awesome. David, how about you?
Not a whole lot. Just, getting ready this weekend. We are celebrating, Summerween.
Okay.
The holiday for people who thinks that there should be more Halloween in the year.
Okay.
I'm very annoyed that it's not exactly 6 months away from Halloween.
You know, but then it wouldn't have the name.
Hmm. Mm.
I guess if you do it 4 months, then you could do it 3 times a year.
True.
Wait, what's the summer solstice? Are we even in summer yet?
Tomorrow. I think last week. Oh, tomorrow. Okay. Yeah, it's right around now.
Yeah, not as we record, but hello summer from spring.
Yeah. Oh, well, I guess, you know, it being on a solstice feels right.
Mm-hmm.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. What does the celebration entail? Is it like just a party?
Yeah, pretty much. I'm hopefully going to do a martial arts demo. Mainly just because, you know, looking for more opportunities to, you know, do performance type stuff.
Mm-hmm. What do you do of a werewolf? You know, it's Halloween. You can make it spooky themed.
Yeah, exactly. I have no idea what I'm dressed up as. I did not plan that far ahead for the thing that happens in like 5 days.
Yeah, yeah. Martial arts master.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know. Just throw on a gi and you're good to go.
I got this image in my
martial
head.
Martial arts master.
Oh yeah,
throw on tight.
You have to. It's obligatory. But I got this image in my head of you like, you know, setting up for the demonstration. Be like, I'll need a volunteer from the audience, and someone raise their hand, bring them up, and then you just kick their face off. Yeah.
So, bap. A story about that. My instructor in college. Taekwondo instructor in college apparently once had a coworker that was just super annoying. You know, oh, that stuff you do, that's, you know, BS. Yeah, you know, the whole macho thing. And so he commits, all right, no, I'm going to do it demos. What you do is you take this cigarette and put it in your mouth and hold it there, and then I'll kick it out of your mouth, and then proceed to kick the guy in the face. And then was like, oh, dude, I guess you're right. I'm sorry. I thought it was better.
That's great.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Violence can be funny sometimes.
I mean, when it's a prank, you know? Oh, gosh.
As long as I didn't have to, like, wire his jaw afterwards.
Yeah, I don't think so, but, you know.
Nice. And Ben, how about you?
I'll bookend with Portland and Solstice news. I had a long weekend with one of my college roommates came up to visit for the last 4 days. So that was nice. We got to go to West Seattle and see stuff. And then this coming week, I'm going to go back down and visit him in Portland. Hmm. And we're going to celebrate Midsummer with our Swedish friends.
So, oh, nice. You did that last year, right?
Yeah, I think I've done it maybe 3 or 4 years in a row now.
Yeah.
There was 1 year we didn't do it for the pandemic, but besides that, we've done it pretty consistently.
If they offer you mushrooms, don't do it.
Dude, they're the nicest people. I'm going to do it anyway.
I don't care. I'm pro mushroom. But I'm making a joke about the movie Midsommar.
Yeah. I was going to say, I've already visited them in Sweden and survived that trip. So I think I'm in the clear. But
I don't know. Long con. Yeah.
You ever befriend someone for 15 years before you axe murder them?
Well, I mean, if it's Sweden, you've got to wicker man them, right? Wasn't that in Sweden?
No, that was in Britain. Yeah, that was Scotland, the summer owl. Yeah.
Island where people talk funny, same thing.
And American comment of the episode goes to David.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I hope it's a good time.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, gotta shake off the cobwebs here and talk about some video games. And to do that, we need to do the regular kind of episode. What with the grind, the multiplayer, and the end boss? And why don't we get started with
the grind.
The grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. Who has something new?
I think, didn't we establish at one point when we have a bye week, that's when Cole has been gone the longest and we throw to you first?
I don't know that we established it, but yeah, I guess
in my head we did.
Yeah. Okay. No, it makes sense. Yeah.
He's been gone the longest compared to his average time. So yeah.
Yes. Right. Yeah. I don't have much because I was traveling and honestly, I've also been playing stuff for work. Had to, like, when I got back from Portland, I had to rebeat the Resident Evil 4 remake, in a weekend. And that's a long game.
Did you do a New Game Plus or did you start from scratch?
I did a New Game Plus, and also I bumped it down to Assisted because it was more to see the subject matter and to make the outline for the episode. So
yeah, so you're blowing off villager limbs at the beginning then.
Oh God. Yeah. No, they're falling apart like crash test dummies. Yeah. Hopefully nobody takes away like a gamer card or whatever for that. It's fine. I played it on standard the first time anyway, I made up somebody and I got mad at them.
Yeah, no. I was going to say, the voices in your head are just being brutal.
Which one of you said that? over the weekend, I finished up Amnesia Rebirth on stream. Again, this is not the newest one, Amnesia the Bunker, although I intend to get around to that pretty soon. But this is the one that came out in 2019 or 2020. I talked about it on the last episode. This is the one where it's like the 1930s. And your character is in a plane crash over Algeria, and amnesia stuff starts happening. It takes place 50 years after the first one.
You know,
amnesia
shit.
Yeah, you don't remember what happened, and there are monsters, and you've done something horrible, things like that. I talked about it last episode, and nothing about my opinion has changed very much since then. Like, it sticks a landing. The story kind of takes a nice turn. It is not entirely as predictable as the predictions that I made were not necessarily accurate, right? It's good. It's kind of a nice compromise between The Dark Descent and, I don't know, something extremely story forward like Machine for Pigs was. So that's a bummer because I don't know that I have anything to like add about it other than, you know, it's good. It's good the whole way through. It was good enough where like I was like, OK, well, I'm just going to finish. I'm just gonna finish this tonight. I was like, I don't want to wait another day to see the end of this. So I did an extra long session on Friday.
So what did you play on Saturday then?
Oh, I took Saturday off because I needed to catch up on work.
Nice.
Yeah. So I used that time to play RE4. I didn't do that on stream just because nobody wants to see me pause every 5 minutes to stop and write notes, you know.
Look, it's somebody's kink.
nobody is a strong word, but yeah.
Hex Frank behind the scenes.
Yep. Yeah, just see what happens when Cole plays for work. It is tedious.
Someone's like, oh man, did you watch the opening scrawl?
The what?
The opening scrawl.
The opening scrawl of RE4? Yeah,
of you writing about RE4.
Let's see here. The other thing that I was playing, I'm going to do an arcade game, actually, just because it is a rare one. I had never seen it before, and it was very cool. It is an arcade game made by Namco that never came to America, called Dark Escape 3D.
Okay.
Do a search for this if you want to. This is one of those sit down shooters that you're in like a dark cabinet. There are there are curtains up, you know, to make sure that you're isolated. And your gun is kind of attached to it. It's real similar to like the Jurassic Park Lost World game in that regard.
I have to point out horror game when you're in a dark cabinet also mm-hmm. describes every Amnesia game.
Yes. Yeah. I've got a theme. So this is a light gun shooter. And there are, you know, the actual play of it is not, and is like, you know, not terribly special. You're shooting infected and zombies. You're going to a bunch of different settings. It's got all your classics, all your hits. It's got like an abandoned school. It's got a lab. It's got a hospital, things like that, as you're going around and dealing with this biological, possibly spiritual threat that's going around. I didn't understand anything because it was not in English. Or no, none of the text was in English. The voiceover was in English, but the sound mix was so skewed that I couldn't understand any of it.
Oh no!
Yeah, but you're shooting monsters. Everything that is special about this is in the cabinet. So this is a 3D game. So you put on 3D glasses, you know, to play it. It has a non-3D mode in case you want to play it just 2D. But you've got the 3D, and that is real cool as a gimmick. It is additive, especially in a shooter where you've got stuff, you know, flying at you all the time, you know. Mm-hmm. The handles for the gun that you are moving, they have it's like on exercise machines. They have those metal panels where it'll take your pulse.
Mm hmm. Okay. Yeah.
And so it's constantly monitoring and displaying your pulse as you're going. That will, as far as I could tell, again, because nothing was in English, as far as I could tell, that affected your score. So like the person, you know, of the two of you who are playing, who kept the coolest overall.
Some sort of ill bleed shit.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like what the Wii Vitality sensor would have been.
That feels to me like the person who's enjoying this the least is the one who's going to get the highest score.
And that was a little bit, and that's complicated, not just because it's 3D and ooh, spooky, scary, and they're, you know, jump scares and stuff. But the jump scares are aided by the fact that they've got some like 4D Honey, I Shrunk the Audience technology built into it. which is not only does like the seat rumble and have like just a crazy motor in it to, you know, kind of like shock you shake you around as stuff happens in the game, but also there is this extremely cool effect where like in the tension and lead up when something bad is about to happen, there's like a cooling unit, there's a fan behind you that will blow down on your neck. How cool is that? So like stuff is like, you know, kind of calm as your characters are moving around, and all of a sudden you just get a chill, right? And then you know, loud noise, great thing right in your face, and then your seat shaking, you know. And like, you know, even if you're like me and you're a, you know, you're just a walking callus when it comes to horror stuff, like no, it, but like it got me. It was really good. There was also something, you know, when I say Honey, I Shrunk the Audience, do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, yeah.
It's a Universal ride?
I think it was Universal or MGM or something. It was,
and they'll like tickle the back of your legs. And,
yeah,
like
oh no, the lab rats got out. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. There was something like they had something like the water spray that just wasn't working with it, which is understandable. It's not the newest game, and also it's rare, so you know parts probably aren't that great. But yeah, I got to sit down with Gary and play the whole thing, and I was like, you know, I'm not made of stone. Like, a gimmick is a gimmick, but an arcade is a place for gimmicks.
Yeah, that's like, what did you expect?
Yeah.
You're not going in there psyched for the gimmick. What are you doing?
Yeah. It rules. It is really good. I have no idea where in America you can play it. You know, again, because Japanese only, not officially released in America, stuff like that. But no, it's Dark Escape 4D. Sorry.
Okay, I was going to ask because Google put up a bunch of 4D stuff. And
yeah, yeah. I called it Dark Escape 3D. That's a name that's going to bounce, then just roll right off of you. So I took a picture of it. The cabinet says Dark Escape 3D, but I guess it's Dark Escape 4D.
Huh.
Yeah. So I'm interested to know. It's interesting to me that the dialogue was in English if it's a Japanese game.
That's a common thing.
Really?
Yeah, like games that have Western settings will have that. You know, I believe like that's been the case for all of Resident Evil. I don't know that any Resident Evil has been voiced in Japanese as far as I know.
Really?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Correct me if I'm wrong on that, but like, yeah, that's a thing that happens.
Actually, now that I think of it, have any of the Resident Evil games ever actually taken place in Japan?
Any is a strong word. I'm going to say none that I can think of take place in Japan. There are, I mean, RE6 goes to China.
Yeah, I was going to say, I remember China. I think specifically Shanghai, right?
I can't recall. I can't recall what city or kind of section. It was just a big city that was reduced to nothing by the C virus.
Yeah. And I remember there's like, you know, the nation of Africa.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, just the wild and, you know, problematic agglomeration of all of Africa into one just setting.
You know, Africa.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm doing a search. I cannot think of any. Nothing's being pulled back. The Tokyo outbreak is a biohazardous event that takes place in Japan. The incident occurs simultaneously with the outbreak in Raccoon City. Huh.
But that's, it doesn't not say the, what, the multiplayer one that they buried, right?
That's so that's from the movies. That is Resident Evil Afterlife. Yeah.
Oh wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So can't answer that question, but I would say no, there has not been. I don't know. I would recommend play this if you can. It's good. It's really good. And that's me.
Nice.
Let's see here. What do we have? Who's got something new?
I mean, I guess I do.
Okay.
Although David talked about it 2 weeks ago.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And this is all I have. So we can probably kind of tag team this shit.
Tag team it.
Yeah. Mostly me too. But I got on the Diablo 4 train.
Hmm.
You know, despite my distaste overall.
Who knew this time around it's steampunk, you're riding trains.
Yeah. Yes, the entire thing is just, it's actually a crossover with Monster Train. Really cool. but after like the fifth friend was like, yeah, I'm playing, you should get on, we'll squad up. I was like, all right, this is, I'll do it, you know, to jump in with friends, Moneysmith included. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I really enjoy this game. I've already beat the campaign and just entered the third quote unquote world tier, which is basically New Game Plus.
Hmm.
But it doesn't like reset your story progress. It just ups the difficulty of all the dungeons.
Oh,
and stuff.
Oh, really? That's new.
Late game. Yeah. At least as far as I can tell, you don't go back through the campaign again. But man, yeah. After playing Last Epoch, I'm like, oh man, this is a really good medium between Diablo 3 and Path of Exile. Now I'm like, oh wait, no, Diablo 4 was the medium between those two games that I was looking for.
Mm-hmm.
They've done a really good job of, you know, giving you all the cool, fun, interesting combinations for builds, while still allowing you to just jump in and whack things and button mash and have fun. So that's a tightrope to walk, and it kind of hits the sweet spot for me. We will have to see, like, now that I'm at end game, and it becomes much more about kind of hunting for a specific rare piece of equipment, or what have you, versus just kind of, you know, getting a steady drip of potential new items fed to you. We'll see how that dynamic changes, but at least as you're going through the campaign, the pacing is great, both in terms of kind of how the story goes, but then just mechanically the amount of time you're spending on creating your fun build versus just playing with it, is really well balanced.
Are the drops ever deterministic? Like, can you go find a specific item in a specific place, or is it just that it has a greater chance if you go to this area or something?
So every dungeon, and there are a ton of them, has a specific aspect that will drop the first time you clear it and kind of be added to your inventory. And basically those are the extras that a legendary piece of gear would have. And so there are certain items that will always drop, like, you know, story specific items, but then the dungeons are going to give you an affix, or, you know, a special power that you can then craft into whatever weapon you want. So I don't think it's any of it is deterministic, except for that piece, which allows you to then kind of build your own of the equipment you want.
Gotcha.
And I know there are, with that, you know, any of the legendary items can be kind of deconstructed to get that affect, which tends to be important, because usually the way these types of games work is that, you know, once you get to kind of end game tier stuff, usually you're building around one, you know, a specific legendary that changes the way one of your abilities works in some interesting way.
Yeah, the build around stuff is kind of fun, and it will cause you to, like, I got a piece of gear that I built around, like, halfway through, and even though I could get armor that's, like, twice as effective from a stats standpoint of this piece of gear, I'll never change away from it until I find something that can also give me the benefit that it gives. Because, like, you know, that's what I'm doing here. And it didn't hold me back. I kind of, with the character that I beat the game with, you know, derped around, checked out the side quests, hit up world events as I saw them, and took a pretty leisurely pace through the game. And it worked out perfectly to where I hit level 50, which is, like, the point at which you're ready to go to the next world tier, right as I finished the campaign. So it was, like, literally the XP reward from the end of the campaign that got me over level 50.
Perfectly balanced.
Yeah.
That's all things should be.
Pretty well meted out. Yeah.
So what class was that?
That was with my necromancer.
Okay. Okay.
But I do have a fun story about all the other characters, because I have four characters. One of them, the necromancer, was just for soloing. And I played that when I didn't have anyone else to play with. All the others I kind of created in tandem with someone else, so we could always have a character at the same level. And originally I had a buddy playing. He's like, oh, what I do with my characters like that is I just name them the person that I'm playing with. That way it's always super easy. So I got this, like, you know, a marksman rogue named Monet Smythe. And, you know, a mage named Matthew and all this stuff. But it was hilarious because I was playing with David, and then I had some other friends jump in, and so I was playing with his character, and we were getting everyone introduced. And they're like, all right, okay, hold on. Okay, so you're Dennis, but named Money Smith. They're Money Smith, but not their characters and
put their name Dennis.
That's yeah, okay. So it was this really weird like thing. And then we're like, oh wait, let me switch over to a new character once David had hopped out. So I switched over to a different character that I was playing that happened to be called Matthew. And then the friend of this person that I had met up with and now was grouped with was also named Matthew.
No.
So I just couldn't get a character with a name that didn't overlap. So maybe that strategy isn't as smart as I thought it was.
So, I mean, you didn't just play Diablo 4. You played who's on first.
Exactly. That's pretty good. But yeah, it was fun. The classes, since I have experience playing a bunch of different classes, feel pretty meaningfully different. And specifically the druid that I'm playing, very tanky, feels way different than any of the ranged classes that I've gone with. So, it's nice to feel like the game is successfully delivering variety. Mm-hmm. And that's without even messing around with the different builds within each class. Yeah, I think there's going to be a lot of fun in this game of just trying different builds and swapping around, mm-hmm. Which it sounds like the upcoming seasonal structure will support. So to my understanding, the way it works is sometime in July, they'll start like a season one, which is, you know, it's the start of the battle pass for the game, I guess. but it's also like it gives you a chance to start a new character with a special set of rules for that season. And like your character for that season is the main way you measure progress. And every new season starts with you rolling up a new character.
Mm.
And yeah, it's interesting to see the game kind of embracing, the convention of just constantly trying new characters that way. You know, it's always been something that you're like, hey, get someone end game and then go through all these dungeons, and kind of, it is cyclical like that. So it makes sense to design it that way.
Mm-hmm.
David, before I go further, where are you at in the story?
So I just got to Act 2. Okay. And I think completed the first mission in Act 2.
Okay.
Very cool. How many acts are there?
There are 5.
Okay.
And it's funny, 3 are available to you right off the bat, like you have quest markers for them.
Right.
But 2 and 3 are in areas that are just, you know, too high level for you, like too dangerous. And so it's this weird thing where it's like, why, I guess you can show me these, but you know, why would I go through the pain of trying to go out of order? I'm not sure. And maybe someone will figure out that like there's some reason why you would do it opposite the numerical order, but you know, 1, 2, 3 are available off the bat, and that leads you into 4 and then 5.
Mm. So is the flow like you do 1 and then grind a bunch and then you go back through and beat the game?
No, no, you do 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 and then go to the next world tier, but it unlocks a whole bunch of new stuff for you to do.
Mm.
Right. So you're really like, I haven't repeated stuff yet.
Yeah, and from what I've seen, unless you very much do only critical path, you pretty much don't have to grind.
Okay.
Yeah.
And in fact, probably my biggest complaint with the game is that the enemies scale, so grinding actually doesn't accomplish anything.
Yeah, it is. I haven't quite figured out, because there are definitely areas that are harder.
Right.
But in general, yeah, like if you go back to early game areas when you're leveled up, the enemies will scale up to your level. And maybe that's it. Maybe it scales up, but it doesn't scale down.
Yeah, I think certain areas have like a minimum scaling in effect.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, okay. Yeah, it is weird. I do love just some of the very bad ideas you do in Act 1, particularly like how you get across the lake.
Yeah.
It's like, there is no scenario where this is a good idea.
Yeah. Well, it is, the story is, you know, for the genre, very good, right? Like it's not heavy enough to really have a ton of meat to it, but there's enough to keep you interested everyone in Sanctuary is, it kind of has designs on someone else to be the savior of Sanctuary, is the way I'll put it. Mm-hmm. And just watching all these dogs chasing each other's tail, and these schemes within schemes, trying to get someone to be the front man for, you know, doing what they consider the right thing is very interesting.
Yeah. There's also, there's some weird things to it. You know, one of the interesting things is most of the lore, you know, most of the characters you're meeting, stuff like that, have, like, if you actually read the unreasonably long backstory from the Diablo 1 manual, like, you know, Lilith and, you know, all of that stuff. Basically, it's interesting that the Diablo 1 manual sets up a whole bunch of bosses that you don't face until, like, Diablo 3 and 4.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. Yeah. Well, and they're pulling from some kind of, I don't know exactly what, because it's not like straight up Catholicism is the religion in the game, but they're kind of pulling from a pantheon of angels and demons that that seems to be kind of established. It almost feels like you know, the Roman pantheon or stuff like that.
Right. One of the weird things that's not clear to me, and this is like as the only person in the world that stupidly cares about the lore, it's somewhat unclear like how old the planet you're on is. Because, you know, there's a bunch of things where like it seems like things should be ancient, but sometimes the way characters interact with them just doesn't quite you know, sync up with that.
Yeah.
So there's things where like you literally miss or meet the first human being. And like no one seems particularly surprised by that. Like it appears that this is, you know, someone that, like, you know, anyone that was at least like a, you know, fairly important world leader could just go talk with them.
Yeah, but did they have a belly button?
You know, cannot confirm. You know, similarly, like one of the characters is like their whole backstory is that they've dedicated their lives to studying the Herodrum. However, that's like act one, and when you get to act two, you're like, oh yeah, the leader of this like entire countryside is openly a member of the Herodrum. It's like, wait, couldn't you have just like gone and asked him?
Yeah. It's kind of like Jedi in Star Wars.
Yeah.
Where it's like, you know, oh, they in the first couple of movies, they seem super rare and then like no one really believes in them. And then you're like, oh no, it was literally just a generation ago that they were kind of running everything.
And there are more of them alive after all of them were supposed to be killed than there were before.
Yeah.
Yep. And some of it, like the game has in the past, you know, played some fast and loose with like, how much of the things that happen in the various games are, you know, unreliable narrators, that sort of thing. So, you know, I'm interested to see where it goes with some of that. But yeah, there is some weird stuff with all of that. I'm interested to see how they deal with the fact that this is like the third time you fought a bunch of these characters.
Yeah. At a certain point, they start seeming less intimidating.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it is interesting. There's at least some, implication that, you know, technically you're, the humans in this setting are, you know, an interbreed of angels and demons. So there's some implication that the humans, even, you know, the baseline humans aren't necessarily humans.
Yeah. That's pretty on the page.
Right.
And
yeah.
And everyone there seems very aware of it.
Right. And that's one of the weird things of like, even when you're playing one of the classes that is straight up like an everyman class, no one bats an eye at the fact that you have very overtly supernatural, you know, levels of ability.
Yeah.
So,
in terms of the act structure, so you're kind of getting your teeth sunk into act two. Mm-hmm. Act one, two, and three all feel about kind of similarly meaty. Act four ended while I was waiting for act four to start.
Yeah. So what I've heard is that supposedly act three is by far the longest.
Act five gives it a run for its money.
Okay.
And act five starts feeling like, all right, this is the boss rush. This is the end. And then it just keeps going and going and going. So.
Yeah. And at least so far, like act one is like very much Slavic, whereas it's act two, it seems like is kind of a Gaelic inspiration.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, snow, mud. Act three is desert/swamp.
Mm-hmm.
And then act five is hell.
Yeah. Yeah. As you know, as you do.
As you do.
But I do like they've, you know, kind of upped their game on some of the like hell levels. I really like the, what is it? I think it's the last area of act one where it's just all taken over by like sort of spider leg tentacle things.
Yeah. Yep. It's not a tumor.
Hmm.
You have to destroy these tumors that are blocking your way.
Land tumors. Yeah.
Yeah, and just everyone quotes that line constantly while you're in there. It is a requirement, otherwise the game will kill your character.
Huh, that's regrettable.
But you're in hell, so
there are some I won't give any spoilers, but there are some really interesting like questions raised around if you die while you're in hell, what is like the what's the situation?
You go to the Death for the Dead from Beetlejuice.
you go to, oddly enough, Hell 2.
Yeah, that's how you get to the next world tier.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, so what I'll be interested to see is, so now that I'm at kind of the end game, like I said, I've been juggling all these different characters to play mm-hmm. with people. I'm kind of hoping, and I think now that I'm in the new game plus, that it becomes a lot less dependent on exactly where you are in the story. And so it'll be easier to jump into, you know, just whatever character you have, and that scaling will keep things leveled out and allow you to just play whatever character with whatever friend.
Hmm.
So fingers crossed on that one.
The big question I've seen right now is whether or not there is a cow level.
Yeah, they still haven't found it.
Oh, it'll be there.
Yeah. I've walked through areas that have cows in them. And I'm just like,
what do we do here? Yeah. Did Diablo 3 have a cow level, or did they just have like the rainbow level, making fun of the art style?
No, they had a cow level.
Okay.
I'm almost certain.
Hmm.
So yeah, that's Diablo 4 for me.
Nice. And David, did you have anything more about Diablo 4?
No, that's about it. I'm just, yeah, I'm mainly trying to fast path through the campaign so that I can then kind of take a more leisurely walk through the rest of it.
Gotcha. Dennis, it sounded like you had other stuff that you have played.
I continued playing GTFO, and man, that game is fun. But it also hurts so bad when you sink 90 minutes into a level only to die in the last area.
Yeah.
Which it just frequently feels like that is how it's designed. And that sucks. Like the last time that we played, it was a level where usually once you finish your objective, you run back to the start of the level to get out. And that's been the case in every level up to this point. This level has a big scary door that is heavily alarmed, and you have to go forward through that door to get to the last area, but you have to like clear a bunch of waves. And it's one of those things where like, we saw the door and I immediately guessed it. I was like, guys, we're probably going to have to go through that at the end, aren't we? And so like, we were planning for it and trying to be cognizant that like, hey, we're going to have a big fight at the end of this. And it's still, we weren't able to get through it on the first try. So, hopefully that will come in time. We're playing with three players in the game. Notoriously does not rebalance, outside of, a four player assumption.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've been talking about just adding a bot just so we can have the extra body.
Right. Oh, yeah, that's really weird that it doesn't rebalance. Huh?
Yeah, I don't. And I think what it is there's kind of a pride, because there are people that do solo it. And that is very much a thing. So I think it is a, you know, choose your own difficulty, and some people bear it as a badge of honor that they can solo it.
Yeah, it's funny. No one told the developers that there's such a thing as options menus. So they're like, nah, we can't. You either have to have it or not have it.
Yep.
So it sounds like you're kind of souring on it.
It was a very painful experience, dreading the end of that level and just feeling like it was hopeless, and then having that confirmed.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
you know,
there's a sense of tragedy to that.
When, you know, that's the whole fantasy of the game, like it or not. I think it's just like, make sure you're in a certain mood going into playing this game.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's me.
I gotcha. Let's see, Ben, how about you?
All right. I got three things. One of them is going to be a choice for what to talk about. I have two different IRL ones, so you guys can pick one. I have Magic or playing a cube in real life that I did last Tuesday, or I have a 1970s Dune board game that I played earlier this week.
I'm really interested in the Dune one, but
yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah. All
right. Yeah. So this is a reprint. They reprinted this game a few years ago. This isn't to be confused with, there's a Dune board game that came out that has all the art of the movie that I own. It's like a deck builder, modern board
Imperium,
game.
Imperium.
Pretty right? good. Yeah. Dune Imperium, made by the guy who made Clank. I think one of the Clank versions. Polished board game. Thumbs up. Great game. You should try it. This one is not that. This is an Ameritrash game. So this is one where randomness can win you the game. People can be locked out of the game if they just get wiped out, which happened to multiple people in this game. So we played with five players. You can play up to six players. It's asymmetric. Everybody has different abilities. And everybody are different factions or families represented on the planet.
When is it asymmetric and when is it class-based?
I guess it's I think the two are pretty similar. I guess class-based would be like a subtype maybe. Asymmetric is any time where you have individual abilities that other people don't have, or perhaps individual victory conditions, which is both those things are in this game. So you have typical factions, if you're familiar with Dune, like the Fremen, House Atreides, the Harkonnens. There's also the Trade Guild and the Emperor. I played as the Emperor. The way it works in a five-player game, you have a map of Dune. There are points of interest around the planet. At the start of the game, basically the correct people are on the correct places, with respect to the fiction of the book. So it's like Atreides are on one city, the Harkonnens are on another, seemingly leaving the planet. The Fremen are kind of all around the planet and the lesser populated areas. The Emperor is off planet. He does not have presence there. So basically, it's kind of like a Risk game, except there's limited movement. You have one action of putting troops on the planet in one specific area, and you have one action of moving troops from one area to another. And the map is kind of like, it looks like a kind of like a clusterfuck, where it's like, it probably is like five or six spaces of movement to get across the planet, and you can move a base of one space if with nothing else, so no other advantages. And basically you fight one another, you have leaders that basically add to your combat ability, there's treachery cards where like leaders can betray the faction that they're on. It is very Ameritrashy in that respect, where it's like, here's a random card. Your leader's dead now. I win. Your 11 troops against my one now all die. You know, it's like you get some really like vile outcomes like that sometimes, but we were okay with this because we typically don't play these games. So it was fun to do that just for the experience. Other cool thing about it is the win condition of this is either a single player controls three different spots on the map of the 5 points of interest, or you can form an alliance with another single player and the two of you own 4 of the 5 points of interest. So that's what makes it really interesting, is you can do this kind of like politicizing. If you form an alliance with someone, you start being able to give them your abilities. So like, for example, Harkonnens are really good at making enemy people betray their factions. And so they can share that ability with whoever's they're allied with, so that both of them like have the same pool of people that they can have betray. This game was fun. However, we started at 6 p.m. We did not finish until 1 a.m.
Oh, so no.
Yikes. And it's not like, it's not by design of it being like a Twilight and Imperium type game or anything. It's just that there's so much like political stuff and so much like fighting, and that all that stuff like takes a lot of time. It's only it's a 10 round game, but it was by far the longest like game session we've ever had, which is both like a positive and a negative, I guess, depending upon, you know, what you're interested in.
Depending on if you had anything planned that night.
yeah, exactly. And the way the alliances went down is there's like a specific option of when you can have it. Like when the sandworms come out is for a weird reason why when you can make or break alliances. That doesn't really match up thematically, but okay. And so when that happened, it happened once in like round two of the game. And I was like, I think I'm going to wait. I don't want to make an alliance yet. We're playing 5 players. The other 4 people paired off into 2 pairs, and the alliances did not change for the rest of the night. So I was like, whoops.
Missed the boat. Okay.
The emperor stands alone.
Which, you know, if you think about it, it's thematic.
I guess so. And I think the special ability is whenever anyone is becoming like buying a treachery card, which does like some sort of shady thing, the spice that they have to pay for that goes to the emperor. So it's like, I get my cut, you know, sort of thing. All the special abilities were pretty fun, like thematically and stuff. But anyway, it was an interesting game. It's certainly better than Risk, but it is still in the Ameritrash camp. So you definitely need to know what you're signing up for when you play it. I think my last gambit was like round 7 or 8. One of the alliances, both their win conditions was to make it to round 10. And so if it went the full 10 rounds and nobody won by that point, then they would win. So like my last gambit was like round 8. I had control of one stronghold that was in the storm, which means no one can get in there. And I had control of another one. And so I was trying to desperately take control of another one that I had like a long shot of getting in, lost 2, and then basically got wiped from the map. Somebody else got wiped from the map the round before that. And then everyone was just kind of like miserable by the end of the game. And we called it for the alliance that was going the full 10 rounds. But, But anyway,
So this is, I mean, just real quick, the Ameritrash one is the old one, the 70s one?
Okay. Yeah, 1970s. You can look up images for it. There's basically like a sandstorm mechanic for it, where it just like rotates around the planet and it'll wipe out.
Was that a reference to the techno song?
Yeah.
That was good. That was quick.
That'll like wipe whatever it's passing over, will wipe out all the spice and all the people there. So you kind of have to constantly like get out of the way of the storm. It's kind of like a rolling mechanic, but I don't know. It was a fun time. It's again, if you're in the mood for it, it's fun to play. That was my IRL game experience. If there's no more questions, I'm going to move on from that.
No, I'm glad to have heard about this because it was a news story when it was reprinted.
Yeah. And like, I remember maybe like 10 years ago, the first board game I joined in Vegas, like somebody brought it one time for a game session. Oh, wow. And like everyone was like in hushed tones was like, oh, it's the Doom game. You know, like, so I think it had like kind of a legacy surrounding it of being like and I will say for the 70s, it was definitely ahead of its time in terms of game design. Yeah. Where, you know, even though there's still Ameritrash aspects to it, it is certainly better than like Risk or Monopoly in terms of game balance. So, Anyway,
it'd be hard to be worse than Risk.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah,
I mean, you could be Monopoly.
Yeah.
Moving on.
Monopoly was meant to be that bad as commentary on capitalism.
Yeah.
Sorry, have to say that if someone
right
because somebody lab.
Yeah, somebody will come and yeah, no, I understand. It is a good statement, but it is sold as a game.
So besides that, I played Jedi Survivor. I played that for some people over the weekend. Had some friends over and they were watching it. Unfortunately, the part I was showing them was basically all the twists in the story kind of happened in a 30-minute time period. So it's like, whoops, do you want me to stop? And they're like, nah, it's fine, keep going.
Yeah.
If you're going to get a little slice, you know, like you're not trying to sell the game, it's something entertaining to watch. So
yeah,
show me who that one boss is.
Yeah, exactly. So there were a few high points kind of strung together closely, and we kind of enjoyed playing that. However, it kind of went back to basics sort of thing where you're just kind of clearing areas, you can kind of choose to what degree you want to complete the maps, depending on how many like fetch quests you want to go on. I got to the end boss. I tried it, I think, twice on the easiest difficulty and died both times. And it's like a hard reset to the beginning of the boss battle. So yeah. I'm just like, I'm going to watch a video. So like an hour ago, I just watched the ending video and I was like, yeah, this is fine.
Yeah. When a game throws a multi-tier, like a multi-phase final boss at you. Yeah, no, that's their game.
I think it's one of those things where they're like, from their perspective, they're like, yeah, it's going to be like Dark Souls. But from my perspective, it's like, I'm not playing this to be like Dark Souls. Like this is not, you haven't put in nearly enough work in other places for this to be a Dark Souls game. So
sorry, honey, but you ain't no Dark Souls.
Yeah.
Yes.
But, so kind of like final review of the game is like, it's kind of like a weird mixed bag where it's like, I think mechanically the game's an improvement over the first one, just in terms of like the open world stuff is, I think, a little bit better than what they had before where, you know, things kind of feel more cohesive and more connected and interconnected with one another. And there's kind of like payoffs to that where, you know, everything kind of is, you can place everything better in your head. Whereas mm-hmm. like, you know, thinking back to the last game, I remember, you know, like the great tree level is sweet, but I have no idea how Kashyyyk fits in with the rest of that story or like, you know, that feels like totally disconnected or like a side mission, you know? Mm-hmm. So there is some payoffs to like that sort of design decision. And then on top of that, just like the movement in general, like wall running, stuff like that, all that does feel good. So I don't really want to drag that through the mud or anything. But just overall, like the story didn't really land too well for me. Certain choices that they make are trying to be like subversive, but they kind of make for like a really kind of lackluster experience, I guess, or like a kind of inconsistent or like, there's not a lot of good emotional payoffs because they're trying to subvert your expectations mm-hmm. in a few places. So it's kind of hard for me to speak to this without spoiling anything, but I'm trying to do that right now.
Yeah.
So in general, it's like, I don't know, if you really love the first game, then yeah, you probably would be into the narrative and you would probably love this game. Just to give an example, like there's like a romance subplot that's like pretty schizophrenic where it's like, it's there when it needs to be, but then like completely missing when it doesn't. And so it's like, so the character motivations are just like very going against one another in like several places. So it's like, it's just like a lot of examples of like trying to have your cake and eat it too, where it's like, what if there's this really, you know, like moody moment here? And it's like, okay, but then that's not carried anywhere else. So like, why, you know, like why have that, you know?
It's like an alien pretending to be a story.
Yeah, and it's like it happens so often that it gets to the point where it's like I just kind of like abandoned the story like maybe halfway through the game, and it's like, okay, well, I'll just keep, you know, like running around a wall riding and
killing people. I'll do some respawn stuff. Yeah.
It's like if a main character was like, hey, I've got to tell you something near the end of a movie, and then they just never reference it again.
So I don't think I have too much more beyond that to say. It's just one of those things where it's like, if you like the first game a lot and you really like the lore of it or something, you might enjoy the second game. If you solely like the mechanics of the game, then you might mm-hmm. enjoy this game. But like, if you're looking for an honest to goodness good game, it's probably not here, unfortunately. So I don't know, whatever, like 8 out of 10, 7 out of 10, something like that.
Yeah.
All right. I got one more game, though, that I do actually really like and think is really, really cool. And that is something Cole has already played, but it's myhouse.wad.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
The Doom mod. So you played this on a Hex Crank, correct?
I played a lot of it on a Hex Crank stream, but I did not see all of it. I got an ending, but this thing is bottomless. Dennis's what implies he wasn't on the episode where I talked about this.
Yes.
This is a recent horror-themed Doom map, which in the fiction about it, like, is... this person had gone back home for like a funeral for his friend, that his mom gave him a box of stuff, and there was a floppy disk with an old Doom map that they had worked on together that was like a Doom map version of this guy's house. Mm-hmm. And then you play it and then stuff goes, you know, horror game with it. Yeah.
Was the ending you got the airplane ending?
Yes, I believe it was. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
I didn't get all the collectibles to get out of there. Yeah.
Got it. Okay, cool. Yeah. Sorry. Trying to say it vaguely enough, because again, this is a game that you definitely don't want to spoil. This is basically like House of Leaves in video game form. Mm-hmm. There's a companion YouTube video you can watch that's like an hour and 50 minutes of a person going through all the different like ways that you can explore this game. Mm-hmm. Yes, on the surface, this is just like, oh, this is like this Doom map my friend made. You can check it out. But like the companion video is kind of interesting. I'm kind of playing and watching in tandem, where it's like I'll play for a bit and then I'll watch the video up to the point where I've gotten, and then I'll play some more and then watch it again. Uh-huh. But it points out some of the things where it's like you have to go through this whole process just to play the game, where you have to watch a video to figure out how to like what you need to install and like how to install it to do it. So for example, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, you've got to like, I don't know. It was a whole process getting ready to stream it, because it had been a long time since I had done anything like in GZ Doom and all of that. Yeah.
If one were to want to play this, you would technically need to download Doom 2, I think, like a pirated copy of it, I believe. Yeah. Which is, I found out the term abandonware is such a thing, where it's software exists, but nobody profits off it or works on it anymore. So it's just this abandoned nebulous software. And apparently Doom 2 is like that kind of. So you have to get that. You also have to download a PK3 file of the map that the person has. You have to download one more thing. It's like the modding tool that people use for it.
Yeah.
So it's funny that you have to go through this process just to play the game, though, because that it's in and of itself feels very House of Leaves-esque, where it's like, you don't just get the content. You have to go through this, you know, like processing these steps and like read a cake recipe to figure out like how to do this. When you eventually launch the game, it looks like a regular game where there's a house that you go in. There's like monsters, you kill them. There's key cards and stuff like that. But then, it starts turning into this like House of Leaves-esque horror, where it's like things start changing, and it's things that you can't really put your finger on at first, where it's like things just feel different, but you're not exactly sure until you go back with a fine comb and are like, no, this window was not here before, or no, like this item was here before, but it's not now, or oh, there's a new room here that didn't exist before.
Or like this room should intersect with that room. What's going on?
And the companion video points out some really interesting kind of like things that I wouldn't have noticed about it, where they just point out like, oh, just looking at the file size of this map, this file size is bigger than Doom 2 itself. In fact, it is 7 times the size of Doom 2 itself. Like, that's kind of weird. And then another thing is, like, the house itself is, like, split level. Like, there's a basement and a main floor or whatever. And a person points out, like, this is not possible in a Doom mod. Nope.
Yeah, no.
When you make maps, there's not floors. Yeah, you can't overlap things like that. So this is all of a sudden, even though it looks very basic, this is incredibly, like, sophisticated. Mm-hmm. And it basically just goes off the rails from there. I don't know how you could play this without looking at a walkthrough or a companion video, though, because it's like, there's so many places where there's certain things I've found, but there's certain things where I don't know if I would have been able to realize certain things were there, I guess.
After a certain point, it relies on you having pretty intricate understanding of the way Doom movement mechanics work. You know, it's just like it assumes a certain amount of knowledge from you like kind of advanced, you know, here's stuff that the base Doom games didn't do, but, you know, here's our expectation kind of thing.
And I think some of it is intended similar to like what was that one horror game of last year that won like Game of the Year? Inscription. It's similar to that, where it's like some of the things I think they intended it to be like crowdfunded or crowdsourced to like figure out what's going on.
Yeah.
Because basically the companion like documents and like data dump on Google Drive for this game basically has hints for how you might be able to get to other parts of the game. Mm-hmm. And the references to like House of Leaves is very much aware of that, because I think in one of the endings it says like Navidson Realtree, which is referencing the character in the book.
Yep. No, just say you walk out of the. Yeah. No, it's a sign, like the for sale sign in front of the house.
Yes.
Yeah. Navidson.
Yeah. So I've only gotten through one of the endings so far. I think there's like four or five at least. I'm impressed that like the ending that I've gotten to, I do know that there's like a point of no return where it's like, you're going to get this ending if you do this. And so I'm more impressed that there is at least like three Easter eggs before that point that I've missed.
Yeah.
So I'm excited to kind of go through that. I don't know. There's certain threads that I'm not sure of. Like, for example, there's like a green shirt in a closet you can put on. Mm-hmm. And I assume that there's something more with that you can do, but I don't know what. But man, yeah, this is a great piece of creative gaming, and it is free-ish, I guess. I don't know what the legality is of recommending this or whatever.
No, it's fine. I'm comfortable recommending it. I streamed it.
Yeah.
And I don't know. In my head, Doom 2 had been open sourced. Mm-hmm. I believe there was a point at that point where it was. It's just hard to get a hold of. I don't know.
Yeah, I think where this comes from for me is like the YouTube channel that shows how to play the game specifically cannot tell you to pirate the game, since they're monetizing the video itself.
Okay. So, yeah. That would take precedent if it's in the official video.
Yeah.
The official video, which I don't think was made when I streamed it.
So, yeah.
There's the reason that I got the ending that I did is just because there was basically no documentation around it.
And I think the one part I'll say that I'll try and be vague, not spoil anything, but the one part of the ending that we both got where there's kind of like brutalism architecture or whatever.
Yeah.
Seeing how that is similar to the architecture of the house when it's in its like regular form is so cool. And the way it plays with space is just very, very interesting. And the mechanic of, you know, kind of what you face there is interesting and kind of like thought provoking and original. So
it rules. It's worth all of the hassle you would go through to try it out.
Yeah. I definitely enjoyed it so far. I think I'll try and go through to the end and see it through, but we'll see.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
That's all I got.
Yep. Cool.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you an appropriate question. Dennis, what question did you ask the nice people?
Yeah, I mean, social media is melting down all around us in all sorts of ways. So I want to know, what games do you use for socialization? Specifically, not what games are just good for playing together, but what are good for hanging out and catching up and generally connecting with friends?
Yeah. And I'll get started here with Greg, who says, I've done a Saturday night game session with friends for years now. Usually we play a slower turn-based game, like Civilization 5 or 6 or Stellaris, which gives people ample time to chat online with each other while waiting for that one person who decided he had to go and piss off three AIs to finish his turn.
Yeah, if you're doing Stellaris, you're playing that until the next Saturday night, probably.
Which is all the more impressive that they announced that new one that's like multiplayer and meant to be played a lot faster. That's Stellaris Nexus or whatever. Yeah. I regret not getting into Stellaris. I know it's still there and it exists, but
I mean, they still routinely release patches and stuff.
It's super impressive. Yeah. Mm-hmm. David, what does Steven say?
Steven says, the Rock Band series has always been a go-to for me. Years after the genre died, I still host Rock Band parties from time to time.
Hell yeah.
Nice.
It's not great for talking during, but it is a very fun game to play, like to an excuse to get together around, you know, the same thing.
Yeah. Couple of Smirnoff Ices. God.
Man, that one party, 2010. Hell of a year. It wasn't the Smirnoff Ice that got me. It was the peppermint schnapps, yeah. The peppermint schnapps, and mixed with the hot cocoa.
You know, it's like normally when you drink that much, you don't remember anything that you drank, but you're going to remember this for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
We're going to make sure of it.
It comes up on a regular enough basis that a 23rd birthday party. No. Yeah. That would be the 23rd. Let's see, Ben, what does Peter say?
Peter says, I used to play Monster World / Iceborne as a decompression method each night when I get home from work. I was teaching at the time, so any way to avoid thinking about how stressful work was appreciated. I didn't stay in teaching long after that, but just being in Monster World Hunter was very helpful as I transitioned into my new career working for Allstate. Plug for Allstate, I guess.
Yeah. Oh, Monster Hunter World. I was like, what's Monster World?
Yeah.
You know, I've not played enough of that to know if it's weird that would be a decompression game. David, do you have is that feasible?
Yeah, it definitely is. Yeah, I could see that, you know, especially if you've got a good group of people. I mean, you're pretty much just, you know, booping monsters.
Is it easy to role play that the monsters are the children you're teaching?
Oh, geez. Oh, no. No.
I don't think that'd be my first game for doing that. But you know, we could work on this.
Let's see, Dennis, what does Kyle say?
Kyle says, virtual editions of board games have become a vital way to stay in touch with friends as we move closer to our families during the COVID diaspora. Tabletopia is great for one-off sessions, but I expect my group's Gloomhaven campaign will last a couple more years of bi-weekly sessions. We probably spend more time talking during Gloomhaven, too, since the game is optimized so poorly, and one of my friends has an old PC.
Oh, yeah.
That's hilarious. not that you have to spend that much time, but that is a very funny situation.
Yeah. I'd never heard of, what is that, Tablehaven? Tabletopia.
Tabletopia, yeah.
Yeah, me neither.
Which I believe it's free. So it's like a tabletop simulator, but free.
Gotcha. Huh. Lots of ways to break copyright. Let's see. Jack says, the Among Us craze was great for catching up with a lot of people at once. Hanging out in Discord is great to spur a conversation. For my closer friends, who all have multiple children and not much free time, our go-to for a while has been the deck builder Across the Obelisk, which I heartily recommend for a good multiplayer Slay the Spire-like experience. Ooh. Across the Obelisk? I'd never heard of that. Ben's ears perked up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Probably Dennis's, too.
Mm-hmm. yeah. I have so little basis for this because I don't do multiplayer games. Continuing, David, what does Rookie say?
Rookie says, believe it or not, Street Fighter VI has been the most social game I've played in years. I've had a great time playing with two or three friends in a custom room, sharing tips on how to counter our own strategies, laughing at the game's nonsense, and just generally having a good time all around. The last time I played games with people I know, it was back in the early 2000s on a couch, like a barbarian. Yeah, I actually got to sit in on some of Rookie's games. It's I can definitely confirm it's surprisingly conducive to just hanging out and kind of chatting.
Nice. Yeah, I believe it. And then finally, Ben, what does Random Sum say?
Random Sum says, Sea of Thieves is the hangout game for a small group I'm in. The way things can be delegated means some crew members are often just hanging out, cooking, drinking, or otherwise being a pirate goof. Great time to make some small talk that we're otherwise missing out on these days.
Nice.
Yeah, Sea of Thieves is very good. I do not recommend it solo, but you know, with a team, it's, yeah.
If you can get a crew together. Yeah. Nice. I don't know. I do podcasts for this to satisfy this need. So I'm going to say pass. Sorry.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
I'd go with Guild Wars 2 is a lot of fun. It's just the right amount of open world that you can pretty much just run in a random direction and have hijinks. Hmm. And, you know, not only will you see cool things, but you also... you know, make various meters go up.
I mean, that's what video games are about, is, you know, meters, numbers.
Yep.
Numbers going up.
I mean, just like all of life is ultimately about numbers.
Mm-hmm. That's not depressing at all. Hey, Ben, how about you?
Getting flashbacks to Satisfactory right now. For me, I would say the commonality, there's not like a single game, but the commonality of the games that me and my friends play online would be like, things like Bigfoot or Crab Champions, where it's like high novelty base, like very meme heavy, very like surprising type things. But then after you play it, like a couple sessions of it, you figure out the meta pretty quickly. And then you're like, all right, on to the next thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, I would say that.
And Dennis, how about you?
Yeah. I mean, it's gotta be Diablo 4, especially after these past 2 weeks. Like, I think I've spent more time talking with some of these friends in the past 2 weeks than I had in the past 2 years previously.
Mm-hmm. I could see it being more conducive than a shooter. You know, it's not like there's nothing happening. You're clicking like crazy. You know.
Oh, no, I play on controller. It's very lazy. You can hold down the button.
Oh, nice. Yeah. I could see that being the case. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Nice. Well, thanks, folks, for answering the question. And thanks, Dennis, for posting this. And if you would like to participate in the multiplayer, go to Facebook.com and Facebook. Okay, there's a site. It's called Facebook. search on Facebook for Duckfeed Community. Join that group and watch for the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons.
I like to imagine that, like, for whatever reason, like, we do not want people on the Facebook app. It has to be Facebook.com.
It has to be the web because of certain international regulations.
The end boss.
Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games and how we feel about them. Changed it up there, modified it a little bit.
Yeah, no, it's good.
Yeah, yeah. Let us see what stories we have here. Dennis, because you posted your, let's just go in the order this stuff was posted. What is your story?
I gotta bring it up. I navigated away from the Slack because I was looking at Across the Obelisk and for some reason put it into the same window instead of opening a new one.
I'm kind of disappointed there's not been a rhythm game called like the Obelisk.
Yeah.
Woodwinds, I don't know how I don't know how that translates over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, this is just me being rapturously joyful over something that I discovered through a Cincinnati gaming Discord.
Okay.
It's like the kind of thing that could only come up because someone grew up near this store. There is apparently a gaming store in Toledo that does the most trippy, like, I almost would say like Tim and Eric, but it's something else. Commercials, and these are like actual commercials that aired on TV for an actual video game store where it's like shoddy animation over like, you know, GarageBand metal. Mm-hmm. It slaps. It is amazing. So if you want to feel happy, I think I posted it to the Slack. We can put it in the show notes too. If you want to feel happy, just go watch this commercial. But Video Game Underground in Toledo, you're doing the Lord's work.
Wow, look at those pumpkins go.
Oh, yeah.
And the Wall of Skulls. amazing. Yeah. Unfortunately, based on their website, it looks like they're online only now.
Yes.
Which is a bummer.
Yes, they are.
But, you know, go and get some the charm of the charm of local commercials with the you know, subject matter interest of video games. Yeah. Let's see. I'm going to do mine. So last week, in the spate, basically E3 broke containment, and now every company is having their own little is jockeying for attention to having their own little events.
Can we call it the threes?
These threes. Yeah. But Grasshopper Manufacture, the Japanese game developer, publisher, I think even too. They had their own event, and they announced that they are remaking a game that I never thought would be remade. Shadows of the Damned is getting a remaster. Shadows of the Damned is the game that Shinji Mikami worked on. Basically, it is the follow-up to Resident Evil 4 that Shinji Mikami did before he did the follow-up to Resident Evil 4 that was The Evil Within.
Okay.
It is a very, so it was PlayStation 3 and Xbox, or maybe it was PlayStation 3 only. Shadows of the Damned. Yeah, no, it was on 360 as well. It's not strictly horror, but you're playing as a demon hunter, going to hell, fighting demons with a talking gun. That's like a little skull. It's real wacky.
I love that your main character's name is Garcia Hotspur.
Yes.
However, the Lord of Demons' name is Fleming.
Yes. The most notable thing about it is it's not especially like an especially great game, but it does have like a really weird like, I don't know, super group of developers behind it. So Shinji Mikami of Resident Evil is like the producer on it. Suda 50, let me see here. I always get the number wrong. Suda 51 of like Killer 7 is the writer for it, which leads to those weird names and stuff going. And the music was done by Akira Yamaoka, the composer and sound designer for Silent Hill.
Oh.
Nice. So like it is notable from like a personnel standpoint. No idea when it's coming out, and they're just saying like, oh yeah, it's coming out for consoles that you can play now. So we'll see, you know, what it ultimately hits, like if it's Switch or if it's like PC or what have you. But yeah, didn't think it would happen, and it is happening.
Very cool.
Yeah. Ben, what's going on in card games?
Yeah, I got two like TCG small time newses. One is Marvel Snap. They kind of changed the meta a little bit. They made a decent update where they added like a new game mode that you can play. This is kind of on the back of like maybe 4 or 5 months ago, they added like a multiplayer game that you can play where it's like you give a code to someone else. And it's this kind of weird system that's different than the base game they have where it's like you play to 10 points and it's almost like a backgammon sort of thing where you can double the points of the rounds. Mm-hmm. So instead of that being like a tied to a cube economy, it's tied to like who wins the match. They added on to this with this weird like ticketing structure sort of thing where it's like you can get special rewards if you win like platinum or whatever. But the way it works is it's like you can enter silver at any time. If you get one win in a row, you get a gold ticket. If you do two wins in a row on that, then you get a ticket of a higher one, then three, then four sort of thing. So it's harder and harder to get the higher wins because you're playing like higher level people. And in addition, it takes more like runs to get there. But there's different like kind of awards they give you for doing that. So it's kind of like an interesting meta shakeup. The games take a lot longer now because instead of just playing like a single game, you could technically play up to like, I don't know, like maybe like 10 games against another person before a result is determined. Like if the person's like doubling or something.
That sounds tiresome.
Yeah, I know. I think they're still trying to fix it because like basically after like 3 or 4 rounds, they'll force you to be played for double points after that to try and speed things along. But yeah, they still probably need to iron out some details with that. But in addition to that, they've kind of nerfed some of the cards. They nerfed Galactus, which was like dominating the meta. So that was kind of interesting. Whatever. I'm not going to get into too much of the inside baseball with that. But just know that there's a shakeup there, so that's kind of interesting. But if you're in, if you like the game there and you've stopped playing, there's maybe something to go back and check out now. Yeah. Other one I want to talk about, which I didn't link, is Magic the Gathering. Just released the Lord of the Rings set today, I believe, the day that we're recording online.
Whole on bunch Arena. Of cards I'll never use.
Yeah. And it's the story that I want to bring to the table with this is what they're doing with the printing of the physical copies of the cards.
Yeah. Yeah.
Have you heard about this?
Is it, okay. Does it relate to the One Ring?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Yep. So they are printing like a one of one copy of a card called the One Ring. It appears to be a business move that's definitely working out for them because they're pricing. There's two different tiers of boxes you can buy it. Like if you're buying packs of cards. So normally like a pack of cards, which is like, or a box of packs is, which is like 15 packs of Magic cards, usually costs like about $100 if you want to buy. I don't know how that works out, but compared to like drafting prices where you get three packs, but they have collector's packs for Lord of the Rings, so it's like two different boxes, like collector's boxes and regular boxes. The collector's boxes are the ones that the One Ring could possibly appear in, and those cost four times the price of a regular box.
What the hell?
It's the most, it's the most Wizards of the Coast thing that ever Wizards of the Coast did.
Oh yeah, this is not like a new thing that they've done. They'll do stuff like this every year, where it's like they'll have like Masters editions of cards, where it's like, oh, these really cool cards that people in the community are like five times the price, you know, for a box, and people still buy it though, because like people are like,
because they're addicted.
Yeah,
it's like there's the what, like 20th anniversary or something that was just massively overpriced.
Yeah, I can believe all this, but. However, I don't want to focus on the greed of Wizards of the Coast. I do want to focus on the interesting meta that has come from them creating this one-of-one card. Where okay.
Actually, I take it back. Like, irrational greed is perfectly on brand for the One Ring.
Yes.
Yes. And continue, so, man. Yeah. So, let's whoever opens this card, like, say it happens at an FNM, and it's like an innocent child that opens this card. They are now literally Frodo in Lord of the Rings, where there are a bunch of forces outside of them that are desperately trying to find this person now and get the thing that's in their possession. And
the incentives aren't great.
I just, in my heart of hearts, I hope that somebody who opens this destroys this card live on television so that people see it. And just all the people who are willing to pay millions of dollars of it just feel crushed.
Yeah.
Because I just think that would be funny.
Just feels like the birth of a new Jake Paul or something.
Yeah. Unfortunately. Yeah. So I wanted to share this because I feel like this is a preamble for a story that I will tell later, which is whenever somebody opens this up and what happens to it, which is it'll just get sold for a couple of $1 million. Then it'll get sold for maybe $1 billion. And then some rich person will have it and it'll never be seen again.
Yep. But the only like appropriate thing to do in the fiction would be to destroy it. And yes. You don't need Mount Doom. Like you can use a 50 cent Bic lighter if you want to. Like,
yep.
Yeah.
Can you find a 50 cent Bic lighter with Mount Doom on it?
I mean, I'm sure they'll custom print anything for you.
I think one streamer I watched said just buy a plane ticket to Hawaii and just cast it in a volcano. And I think that sounds good enough.
Yeah. And no, I don't like it. I don't care for it. Is it an overpowered card? Like, do we know what the card does?
So there's regular forms of the card. Like the collector's one is a one of one, but they have a regular version of it that's written with English text, not like the Elvish text. It's an okay card. It's I'm sure it'll be like decent, but it's four mana, so it's already out of like Legacy because of that, I would imagine.
Yeah.
But no, it like draws you cards and kills you. So it's maybe thematic to what the ring is a little bit. Mm-hmm. But yeah. Yep. That's all.
Yeah. Wild. David, round us out with some wacky weird news.
Yeah, so a dude attempted to, in Columbia, South Carolina, attempted to rob a convenience store and actually succeeded. He, flashed the gun, which was in his waistband, to the guy working the counter and apparently got cash.
I'm hoping it was a Duck Hunt gun.
Yes,
yeah,
it was.
That's what it was. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
When he was arrested, according to this quote, a short time later at a parking lot down the street, it was found that, yes, it was a Nintendo Zapper.
Was it spray painted or was it gray and orange?
It does not say.
I mean, the clerk did the right thing. Like, fuck, why would I put my life on the line for... Yeah, why would I put my life on the line for at most $200 of my boss's money?
Yeah.
I actually found while researching this story, you can in fact buy a kit to color a Glock like a Nintendo Zapper.
That's a terrible idea.
Why would somebody make a kit for that?
Like, it's, you know, it's still shaped like a Glock, but it's, you know, got all the you know, the decals and all that stuff.
Huh. Yeah, no, I don't care for that either.
No, that's it's almost like American gun culture is often horribly irresponsible.
Yeah, it's how could you say something so controversial? You've ruined us.
Looks like we're ending on a downer this week, guys.
So, also, I did want to point out we missed Gwen's multiplayer response.
She
suggested that the ultimate hangout game is Viscera Cleanup Detail.
Oh, yeah. What? Yeah.
Sorry, those were slipped in there. Okay, very cool.
I can see Viscera Cleanup Detail. It's no presh. You know, it's a lot of repetitive tasks. Yeah, no, it would literally be like working a janitorial shift with somebody. Nice. Well, that's all the stories, I think. And that sounds like the show. How do you all feel about buttoning it up?
Let us button.
The credit.
Thank you so much for listening to level number 462. We really appreciate it. You know what to do if you would like to support us, patreon.com/duckfeedtv, you know, subscribe, rate, review wherever you can, join the Duckfeed community and participate in the multiplayer. All of that is good. It's good stuff that we like. Dennis, remind people again, if they're listening to this and they want to see you at, Origin over the weekend, what table you're at?
Booth 645.
Booth 645. Is that a dedicated Deck of Wonders, or is that with your? Okay, cool. Nice.
Yeah. They had someone drop last minute, and I had asked them to let me know if they had any booths open up. So I'm going to be there. Giant background and with games to sell for the first time ever. Like, I finally will be at a con with inventory, which is
nice.
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Real cool. Trying to think of other stuff, but I can't. Oh, I'm bad about doing this on this show. Thank you to our producer, Gwen, for helping put the show together. She does great work. We appreciate her. Yeah. Is there anything I'm forgetting?
Don't think so.
All right. So I'm Cole. I've been Cole. You can find me
unsure about that.
Yeah, sorry. Literally, we skipped the week and I went across the country and did stuff for the first time, and then I forgot how to do everything.
I don't have this work anymore.
Yeah. Oh, I'm on Blue Sky now. Thanks to a listener. I don't know if they want to be named, so I'm not going to name them. But a listener gave me an invite to it, so I'm Cole Ross on Blue Sky.
So that means you can get all of us in now, right?
Once I get invites.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And I'm just cross-posting some of my old bangers, some of my old literally I'm just priming the pump. Like, I've got no idea.
Put the greatest hits out there.
Yeah, I'm putting the greatest hits up. Yeah. So Cole Ross on Blue Sky. That's Cole with a K, KOLERoss.
Nice. And since Reddit seems to be determined to follow Twitter, Blue Sky looks ever better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Somebody else go next.
Oh,
I'm
right.
I'm David Mysmith, and I am not on Blue Sky.
No! What?
Anarchy. Anarchy.
Hey, you said someone else.
Yeah. Dennis, go.
I'm all thrown off because we did the like where can we find you at Origins thing, and that I had done it. Man, we're gone for a week and we just fall apart at the finish line.
I know, right?
I don't even know anymore. Yeah. I'm the person I said at the place that I said before when I thought I did this thing that I always do.
Booth 645.
And I'm David Meismith.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And stick around for some titles.
Wait, who was I?
Which one are you?
This is what happens when you name yourself after random people.
All right. I only have one. I have nobody is a strong word.
It's not bad.
I also have one. I have an arcade is a place for gimmicks.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Piggybacking off of that, I had psyched for the gimmick.
Okay.
Which is kind of in the same vein or from the same conversation. I had a Ben quote. This one is not that. Talking about the Dune games. And then I had two from the E3 conversation or the not E3 conversation. I had E3 broke containment. And then these threes.
These. How is that stylized? These threes.
Both the written words. Yeah, these threes.
So, all right.
Which is probably a tongue twister. These threes, these threes, these threes, these. Yeah, kind of.
Yeah. What you got, Ben?
I have no titles.
Okay. I like E3 broke containment.
I do too.
Yeah.
Sounds like a news headline.
Yep.
Yeah. I can hear the sirens going off right now.
Whoop. Cool. Well, it is decided.